You are listening to Mystic Tea, a podcast dedicated to the mystical and magical. I'm your host, Pasha Hanina. I've invited some of my favorite friends from many paths and traditions to share their wit and wisdom, unique gifts, and crafty conjurings. So take off your cloak, set a spell, and join us for a cuppa, Mystic Tea. Welcome back to the Tea House. That was Kristen Munoz performing the Strong Woman song in her powerful and incredible voice. I'm sure you felt it wash through you the way that I did. Welcome to the Tea House, Kristen. We're back for another episode of Mystic Tea and a long-awaited moment for us to sit together and talk about things. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
As we begin, and we always start each episode, you know, with what you're drinking, but you don't know what you're drinking because you use it to surprise you. So I'm going to pour you a cup.
Thank you.
And then I'm going to pour me a cup. You can hear the teacups clinking.
So, cheers.
Blessings.
Blessings.
Oh, it's warm. This is love tea. Ooh, and I thought it was just perfect for where we're going today. It has Damiana leaf, roasted cacao and carob. Ooh. And you really can probably taste those rose petals and the cinnamon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then some
delicious
vanilla and orange. It's just like your song. It just kind of warms you up and washes through you. Thank you for bringing the beautiful gift of you and the beautiful gift of your song today. Before we dive right in, and I'll hand it over for you to share what's on your mind, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the work that Susan and I did during our Wise Woman retreat, unveiling the Wise Woman up here in Hot Springs a couple weeks ago around the equinox. And one of those, I think one of the key takeaways for us, in addition to our own personal healing, was that reawakening the magic and the medicine of our female ancestors. They carried so much struggle and they wore so many layers to make it this far. And so we were able to honor them in that way. And so that was just really powerful. And I've noticed, like in my line and with my mom and my sisters, you know, we've been talking a little bit about some of that. And it's like things really got shook up during one of our ceremonies. There were millions of grandmothers that came into the grove, into the sacred circle that we created. They just came in, like millions and millions, not just our line. And to hold them in that way and honor them in that way and thank them and show gratitude for their journey. And, you know, we carry so much that we don't know. And so your song welcoming that awareness into our space today is really, really special.
Thank you so much. I love that you had that retreat and I really wanted to be with you all. I was there in spirit and I would love to come to the next one, but I felt the power of the work you all were doing. And I felt like I was there, even though I wasn't there in some way.
Thank you. We felt you too. I wanted to, I'm really, really inspired by your story. I'm really inspired about your work. And I'd just love for you to, I normally start out with a bio, but I didn't this time. Tell us a little bit about Kristen and a little bit about Moon Girl Glass.
Okay. So I built a glass blowing studio here about 16 years ago with a prayer to have people have a safe place to create with fire and crystal and water and air. And so we work with all of the elements to co-create with our essence these beautiful pieces of art that are made out of crystal that comes from Spruce Pine, North Carolina, which is only about 40 minutes from where we live. And being in a space where we can work with all of the elements like that is a spiritual practice for me. And it takes a lot of overcoming fear to work with these elements in this way. And so it became pretty evident to me that I was doing alchemy and that I was transforming fear into beauty with my art.
Yeah, absolutely.
I create everything in there with intentions of people experiencing more self-love, for them to experience joy when they see these creations. I should really call them co-creations because I'm always asking for Isis, the great goddess, to assist me in using my body to create these pieces through me.
Mm-hmm. And I love that we're sitting here in a temple dedicated to Isis and all her names as we're recording this this podcast. I feel her around us and holding our space together. And I feel that in many ways, she's kind of guided our journey to get to know each other and support each other and the work that we're doing. So
I feel that too.
That's awesome. So I mentioned your work way back when I was talking. I don't know if you heard that episode, but when I was talking about in the mental health, we did an episode on mental health. And I was talking a little bit about the patterns and the swirls and the way that that your art and beauty comes out in some of your glass work. It's really incredible. But you're not only are you gifted as a glass, artist, but there's transmutation and transformation in each piece that is something that's very sacred. So I love things that have a seemingly mundane use, like a drinking glass or a light fixture or a bird feeder. And when you can bring sacred into the mundane, that is where I like to live.
Me too.
I call that being the magic, but I love to be in that place where life is full of opportunities for little rituals. And most of those rituals happen very privately. But when you have something that's mundane, like I'm having my water, or you can take that drinking water, suddenly it becomes something sacred because it's in a sacred vessel. It's infused with all of that incredible energy and it becomes part of the way you exist and show up in the world. without explanation, without even carving time. I don't have to carve time. Well, okay, let's be honest. I do have to carve time to drink water because I'm a coffee fiend. But, you know, I'm like, I actually keep a tally. And I'm like, you've had what glass of water? I'm super proud of myself when I meet that goal. But, you know, like in reality, like I'm just drinking my water. But I know it's something sacred. I know what went into it. And even if I don't, I can feel it. Like even if I don't know the no, I can feel the sacredness of this mundane act. And I think that that's what's really beautiful and purposeful about how you heal others in that way.
She really healed me. So I can share that with others. And I've kept this story inside of me for over 7 years now, out of fear and shame. And I started realizing that if I kept it inside of me, then it's only medicine for me and my family. But if I release the story, it can be a medicine for many more people. And so I want to thank you and honor you for waking that up in me and helping me see my story as a story of empowerment instead of a story to live in victimhood or shame.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the messages that I got from Spirit when I'm pushing me out of my comfort zone was, if you don't share this story, you're the only one that's healed. And I think that that's what you're speaking to now. But tell us, what is this story?
Okay. The story is my journey through the dark night of the soul, where I lost everything that was important to me in the blink of an eye. And having to find a reason to live and find my power to get through that time, was able to be reached through my glass studio and through working with all of the elements. And I found myself in a legal situation because of a sacred medicine that I was carrying for my church. And through this process, I lost my children. I lost my spiritual community. And all of my family lives so far away. So I was completely alone and broken and looking at 10 years incarceration. And my friends were all afraid of me. I was banished from my spiritual community. And so, like the song says, I had to find my own personal Jesus. And I showed up to a court case, a custody battle, without an attorney because I was hopeless and I was also broke. So when I stood in front of that judge, he called me by my name. He said, "Kristen Munoz, I know that you're a good mother, and I know what you're facing, and you need to leave this courtroom immediately and find an attorney. No, actually, you need to find two really good attorneys, and you need to come back and see me." And when he said that to me, I felt seen by him, and his words brought me to tears, but it gave me the hope that I needed to try. So later that day, my attorney had called me, and she was wondering why I had showed up to a court case without her. And I explained the situation and just told her I'm done for. This is a really bad, bad situation. And she, well, I also told her that I was broke. And yeah, there was no way I could afford an attorney, even if I wanted one. And she said, well, I love your glass work and I love you and your children love you and they need you. So I'm building a new house and I want you to do all the lighting for me in my house and we'll get through this together. So I immediately got a landscaping job so I could raise the money to buy the materials to blow the glass lighting for all of the light fixtures in her home. And we won. And I won my children back. The courts decided that religious prayer was not putting my children in any harm. And so I beat DSS and I beat their fathers and a grandmother for custody of my children.
And sing the strong woman song proudly.
Yeah, that took a little while to come afterwards, but it definitely is a medicine that helped me get through. But during that time, I stopped singing. I used to sing all the time before that had happened. So it took me a little longer to find my voice again, but I found it.
Found it and also found a way to sing it out in a different relationship. I often wonder if that's part of our purpose right now. I look at my children and I see such authority. I see so much justice in their actions and I see so much truth in who they are. And I know that I didn't carry that in truth when I was younger. I didn't know what that felt like or looked like. And I was still carrying the wounds of generation after generation after generation of agreement to inflict suffering upon women. And when I say agreement, I don't mean that some grandmother sat around and said, you know what, today's a good day to suffer. But rather as a society, they were brought down to such desperation that they stopped fighting for themselves because they thought nobody would help. And I don't know what your ancestral lineage looks like. Many of us don't. We have, you know, 23andMe now, which we can put that in and we can say, oh, you know, here's a little bit more that I know. But I know that you're intuitive like me. And so the information that I always received as a young one came straight from my ancestors. They're talking to me all the time. I wondered if part of my journey was just to say, this is stopping here now. I'm the fire. I'm the kiln. Put all your medicine in me. Put all your fear. Put all your worry. Put all your hate. Put the illusion. Put it right in me. I've been a priestess of Isis for, you know, a long time, most of my life. Let her handle it. Let her transmute it. Let her light the fire, start that forge, and burn it out. Because I don't want, and in fact, I will not allow it to continue any further than me. And I talk to a lot of women, different ages, but seem to have that same purpose. long time ago, Spirit told me, heal the mother, heal the child. I said, what's my purpose here? I like to get to the nitty gritty. I'm like, what am I? Come on, we're wasting time. Give it to me. What's my job? Heal the mother, heal the child. That's so, there's so many aspects of that. The earth is our mother, right? All children will be healed if we heal her. The water is our mother, right? Isis is our mother. We heal through that, bringing her back in integrity, but also the physical. When you carry that medicine forward, when you sing the song of the grandmother, of the strong woman, I feel them also feeling seen. I don't know. What do you think about? I'm rambling. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think the more that we listen to the grandmothers, the more all of our grandmothers are seen. Mm-hmm. The more we make a space for them to come through. It's not just physical, it's energy. And it's a feeling of being held in complete, unconditional love. And there's nothing else in the world that's like it. There's nothing as powerful as that. And I think the more that we walk in that way without judgment and trying to hold space for the unconditional love, the more that we can unconditionally love ourselves, the more Pachamama herself heals. And like you said, then the more the children heal. I witnessed my teen having a hard time with changing schools and how hard that was for them, and also how hard it was for me to deal with them. But I started realizing at that time that whatever I don't like with outside of myself, I can transform within myself. So I started doing a lot of inner work and inner healing. And they became healed through that process. Mm-hmm. And our relationship is so genuine and beautiful and trusting. And we have fun together again. And it's really powerful to witness how just changing yourself changes your environment in such a profound way. We forget that we have the power within us so easily.
One thing that's coming up for me when you're saying this is the way that I was shown was we had to be strong all the time. We had to put up this impenetrable sort of barrier that says, you don't want to mess with me. That part to continue that cycle for me was easy. I lived that there for a long time. I was a tough cookie. I never ran away from any obstacle that came into my thing. And I wasn't afraid to go in with all, you know, metaphorical guns a-blazing. But when I had my children, I had to be vulnerable in a way that showed them you can be soft. You can be gentle. And you're still safe. And, you know, life is circular. Everybody must go through sometimes a few times those cycles that take you into very painful mental, physical, emotional, or spiritual places. There's no human that will not at some time, no matter how much we try to protect our children from it, they're going to go. They deserve that because they deserve to become whole in their own journey, absent of our own. But I think that the hardest space for me to open within myself was to show them that I don't always have to be strong. And that put me in a place where I had to be very vulnerable. And I did not have those tools. So the only option that I had was to surrender and to be, and to allow spirit to drive. I didn't know how to authentically show up for them and say, guess what? No matter which way you fall, you're going to hit a marshmallow, because it's, I'm surrounding you with gentleness, kindness, a safe space. I do not believe that our ancestors, whether they're female or male, really experience that. I think that that's a shift in our societal consciousness that says you can actually be soft and still be strong. In Western society, you know, I don't want to put this out there like it's applicable universally, but certainly in the type of society that most Westerners have experienced, you have to be aggressive or you're going to get trampled. And when you don't feel that way on the inside, it's very hard to know that there's safety in that space for you. And I can still see the pain that you carry, even though you've done a lot of healing around it. The pain of the memory of what, where you walked yourself. And I hope along with that is immense pride and strength in where you walked yourself from there and where you continue, how you continue to walk yourself home for yourself first, right? Oxygen mask first. And then our kids look at that and they say, damn, that's pretty good. I have that tool in my toolbox now. I know that no matter what I face, if I show up in a good way, then I'm going to be carried through that. And I think that's a beautiful gift. And I think if you could see in the future that that would be a gift that you gave to your children through that journey, you wouldn't hesitate to do it again.
Yeah, I think for them to see me fight for them and not give up allows them to walk with confidence in this life. And for them to witness the way that I love myself, they get to see what self-love looks like. And I think those are some of the most powerful gifts we can give to our children. That they can feel safe in their own bodies to express their uniqueness without fear is so powerful.
And you also demonstrated that you're going to stand up for your medicine.
Absolutely. I would do it again. I said when this medicine came into my life that I would die for this medicine. And I meant that. And I guess that was part of me knowing there was some long journey that was going to take place with this medicine without knowing it.
And you did die for that medicine. That old you that was carrying something else died so that something new could be born in its place.
Yeah, I didn't really see that until you mentioned it. And now that I've gotten to know Isis so much more deeply, I realize that she's here for all of us to help put the fragmented, broken pieces back together. She's here for the ones who've been betrayed or the ones who have been left out and forgotten, outcasted. She's here for all of us. And she taught me that I'm worth fighting for. And she is continuing to teach me how we can use the elements in my studio as a sacred space to heal many people through the magic of glass. So my glass furnace is named Isis to honor her for helping us. She's leading us through the cosmos.
For sure. She's also a big fan of resurrection. And I think about, like, you know, there's a fragility to glass, and there's something very amazing that if you drop a piece, you can throw it into the furnace and it can be resurrected as something else. And
yes, I have a little mountain of glass that we use to transform into something beautiful from the pieces that have hit the floor, and they were a mistake. So we can put them into molds and remelt them back into beauty. Mm-hmm.
Isis has taught me that there's true beauty in the shatter itself. Mm-hmm. When we are holding ourselves so rigid in this form, we are often not showing up authentically. We're still operating in survival. We're still trying to carve out our space in a world that's not really moving over to make room for our shine. And it takes that shatter, that breaking down of the external. Sometimes, you know, another thing Spirit said is, you know, this can go as easy or as hard as you want it to. You can break all the way. For me, I died 7 times. I've been struck by lightning 3 times. You know, that we can make this as easy or as hard as you want. And I'm like, I don't know, Zap. You know, I get zapped again. I'm like, man, all right, let's do it. But it's in that shatter, because if I just want to keep going with this way that I've, you know, had to live, or I've had to believe, or I've had to operate because it got me this far, or I don't know who I would be without this identity or whatever it is, I'm still not showing up for her. The only way that I can show up truly is to open myself and allow her to be shining through me. That I become that vessel for the divine, just like you create divine vessels, right? But we are also in our physical, we are mental, emotional, spiritual, we are vessels for the divine. So that when I can't do that, if I have such a heavy armor up that's trying to show everybody, see, I have value, it's not up to me whether or not somebody sees value in me. I can only show up for work. I show up for work every day. Every day I'm ready to work. That doesn't mean that somebody's going to see value or, you know, look upon that with their eyes in the same way that I feel in my heart. She showed me that way, you know, and it's not, I don't care. You know, it doesn't have that ego attached to it. It's just that you have to lose that. And the way that we lose that sometimes is through our safety, whether it's physical safety. For me, you know, I had a very aggressive form of cancer. I was sure I was going to die. And I had to do Western medicine, you know, which I didn't do at that time to survive. I had to die 7 times, every cell in my body. But when I came out of it, I was new. I was prepared to do that. you know, and everything looked different for me, because before I heard things, I saw things, I did things in a different way. And then when Spirit sent me here, I was over out on the bypass, remember the old store. Mm-hmm. And I was still foggy from radiation and chemo, and I was bald, you know, all the things. And I didn't know anybody. I don't even, you know, Spirit said, you're going here. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Never been here in my life. And here I am in the middle of this rural county with a big old witchy sign out front. And I was like, okay, we'll see what happens. But people would come and ask me questions, and I did my best, but I didn't feel the same as it did before the seven deaths, before that journey. And one time I laid down on the floor and I just started crying. I locked the door. I started crying. And I was like, you've asked too much of me. I'm a charlatan. Like, I don't know where these answers are coming from, but you're not here with me. And you promised you would be here with me and giving me help to do this. And you're not here. And then I heard differently, but I heard, we are just no longer outside of you. Whereas before I was hearing or I was seeing or I was getting that external comfort, they were outside of me. But through that death and rebirth, I became, they were part of me. We were no longer separate. And then I said, oh, now it makes sense to me, right? But if I hadn't done that, if I hadn't broken down, they wouldn't have been able to get in. I was too protected. And so I think that that's another thing, you know, that Isis showed me, is that you, as a pure vessel, when you show up in a good way and your heart is good and your medicine is good and your magic is good and it's truthful, not the hocus pocus, right? Not throwing the curses around to everyone who's wronged you, because that list would be long, but you're showing up. You are, they move right through you. It's, you are the divine. You are the sacred vessel. And then the song returns. It can't help it. Right? It has a new home now. It's no longer separate. You are the song, right? You are the medicine. You are the magic. And it feels a little different. Some of us have to learn the hard way. Others, maybe it comes easier. But for me, I took a lot of lumps along the way. I don't know. I guess I want to ask you, like, I feel like there's so many people. We're moving into eclipse time. I mean, people are feeling it. I think that certainly over the past 10 or 11 years, I would say it's gotten very intense and people are feeling these changes. They're creating changes, they're reacting to changes, they're resisting changes. But as we continue to create more vessels and more people showing up in their work, I feel like it becomes more expansive. But it's very hard for some people to break through that conditioning or the old story or whatever it is and get to the other side of it. And a lot of people are seeking help in that way. What could you tell them, or what do you suggest?
Whenever things start to feel heavy with all of the new changes that are coming in, I transform my thoughts into just welcoming them in. I'm welcoming in an expanded consciousness of love, because the energies that are coming in right now, it's Christ consciousness. So when they say Christ is coming back, I believe Christ is coming back through our consciousness, the Christ consciousness within each one of us. And we are all waking up to this. Maybe not all of us, but it doesn't matter, because as we wake up, we wake others up. And we are more powerful in the awakening than the ones who are still walking unconscious to those energies that are coming forth. So I feel like when it starts to get hard on our bodies, because we will experience, or I've been experiencing, a fatigue and feeling sometimes these thoughts coming through that don't feel like energetically aligned with who I am and my energy. So I just ask, is this me? And I know it's not me. So I use a lot of mantras to help ground myself in the energies and take the rest that my body needs when I'm feeling fatigued or like things are getting too much.
That's good advice.
Also yoga and breath work.
Like, and a good cup of tea.
And a good cup of tea. And you know what? It's community. So I want to share this story of something that happened to me recently. So when I lost my community, I went into hermit mode. So I've been pretty alone. I learned how to blow glass by myself, which is actually designed to be a team sport. But, and I say by myself, but I mean just with Isis and my spirit guides helping me. I realized though that I want community again. And the same story that took my community away from me, I can use to build my community back. And as these thoughts started coming to me, I started wanting to honor beaver, have beaver on my altar. So I was at the island and I started seeing beaver chewing sticks. So I was like, oh, get some beaver sticks for the altar. And so we put them on the altar. And then the next day we saw the beaver and it was so magical. I'd never seen a live beaver before. And it reminded me of like this little monk, like such a prayerful sentient being in the tail. Oh my God. It was so amazing. And, but my dogs wanted to kill this thing so bad. I had a wolf dog and a Siberian woolly husky, and they're trained really well. So usually you say, leave it, and they'll just want to leave something alone. Well, they wouldn't listen. And so I stopped going to the island because I wanted the beaver's life to be saved. And went to a completely different place, many, many miles away. And the next thing I knew, my dog had a beaver. And it was dead. And I cried and I felt terrible for this animal. And I got the dogs back into the car. And I heard, that's your pipe bag. I'm in the process of building a chinupa. And so I picked up my kid from school so he could sit with the dog so I could go and get this beaver. And I honored its spirit and prayed with it. And then I skinned it and I fleshed it. And I started reading the beaver medicine and I broke into tears because it was my prayers looking back at me in black and white on the paper. And so I've never made a beaver hide before, but I have now, and it is beautiful and it is stunning. And we're going to make some moccasins out of the tail.
Oh, cool.
And I'm still in the process of working with the skull, but the teeth are just amazing. So I want to keep the whole skull together and turn it into a mold so that we can make glass beaver skulls.
Oh, that's amazing.
So throughout this whole process, animals have come to help me. And when I lost my children, I had to drive back and forth to Chapel Hill for visitation once a month. And on these journeys, I ended up finding 9 hawks on the side of the road that I picked up and prayed for. and buried them all over my land for protection and to honor their nation, their spirit. I made prayer fans out of them, and I gifted them to the 9 women who were outside of my Humblecha, my vision quest ceremony, that I made the fans in, not knowing that there were going to be 9 women after the ceremony waiting for me. So it was pretty special to have that experience with the Hawk Nation. And I just discovered a couple of days ago that when Isis would bring Osiris back to life, the 2 times that she did that, she turned into a hawk. Mm-hmm. And I got goosebumps all over my body when I realized that, because one of the hawks that came in a really special way when I offered tobacco out the window driving with a friend of mine for the Hawk Nation. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm offering tobacco for the hawk that's coming." And half an hour later, I saw the hawk on the side of the road, and it was still warm. It had like just been hit by a car.
And thankfully they didn't make you have to do that part too again with the beaver.
Gosh. This hawk became the guardian of my children when they were not with me. And so its talons got wrapped in crystals, and its skull in this, I forget what you call those boxes from India where they open them, the prayer boxes.
Oh, I don't know the name of it.
I had their hair, my children's hair in there. My youngest one had these beautiful dreadlocks, and when his grandmother took him from, when DSS placed him with his grandmother, she cut off all of his locks and mailed them to me. And so I had the hawk watching over my hair. Children through the hair. Ooh. And now I'm in the process of creating a life-sized hawk with that hawk out of glass, so that we can honor the medicine of the Hawk Nation in that way. So I feel like when we go through the dark night of the soul experiences, the animals come to aid us. I can't even tell you how long I spent in my house once I got out of jail, not eating, not speaking to anyone, basically wanting to die. And the birds started knocking on my windows. Mm-hmm. The red birds every morning. And this one morning, it was my youngest one's 5th birthday. And I don't even know how long I had been in that bed. I did not want to get up. And this wren flew in my window while I was praying for him, and flew all around me 3 times in my bed, and then flew downstairs. And since I wanted to help the bird get out, I got out of the bed for the first time in I don't know how long to help this bird. So they helped me remember to eat and helped me remember that there was a reason to live and there was work to be done. So get up. Because we've got work to do.
Birds are sacred to me too. And my ancestry's bird clan. So I do have bird clan. And what was really interesting is that I always loved birds. I always saved birds. All my friends would find like a little bird nest or something like that. I never did. And there would be like feathers, you know, like you walk out of the store and there's all the little feathers everywhere all the time. I never found any feathers. I never got any feathers until in my adult years, I met a medicine man and he taught me the traditional medicine. And it was after that Raven was calling from the cliff and said, "Come here, I have something for you." And I knew I was going to get my feather. And so that was that same day that I was shown how to work with the feathers in a traditional way, I was given the opportunity to collect my first. And I've got a lot of stories about that. But one of the interesting things that that I think about when it comes to birds is that I, you know, was I did, at this time, it was really strange. I didn't like to go in the water. And I was really weird about it. Like we would go to the lake or I would put my feet in, but like really going in. But there was a circle, this is right at the very beginning. Like I'm listening now. I'm doing the stuff I'm supposed to do, but it's really uncomfortable. And I don't know why. Like, I don't know. And I don't know what, and I don't know why. And I sort of feel like I'm being pushed to do this against my will. So I see this, all these hawks, and they're circling, but they're in the center of the lake. We go to the lake, and this is up at like Big Bear Lake or something like that in California. And I see them circling, and there's a bunch of them. So they get my attention, and I hear them. They're calling me, right? So I said, okay, I'm going to go out there. And it's like squishy, right? And I'm like stepping on it. And I'm like, ah. And then it gets like cold in the crotch. And I'm like, ah, ah, ah. But they're still like, they're right in the middle of the lake and I'm not there yet. And I'm getting deeper and deeper. And I'm a good swimmer. Like I can swim, but I don't know why. I just was just like, ah. And so I get there and I'm like on my tippy toes and I'm right in the middle of the lake. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm like, just tell me what you want. And they start diving. I don't know if you've ever seen hawks dive. They're not diving for like food. They're just diving.
They're like playing.
They're right? like playing. And they're doing these diving motions. And I hear, dive in. Mm-hmm. And they made me dive in. But what they were saying to me was like, don't two-bit this. If you're going to do it, do it. You know, or do it or don't. But if you're going to do it, dive all the way in. And those, I mean, there's a lot of stories that we don't have time for in this podcast too, about how the birds led us here. But one thing I'll wrap with is we were in Florida after my cancer diagnosis. We'd already been told to come here. We'd already dropped all of our stuff off. We had no idea where we were going, had never been here in our lives, but they said, you'll know by December where you're going. Only knew I was going to be, you know, 35 miles outside of Asheville. That's all I knew. I said, okay. Then I got diagnosed with cancer. And I'm like, wait a minute. It's October. You said we'd know where we were going to be in by December. And I'm not going to be in Florida. I'll tell you that much. And Spirit said, yeah, but we didn't tell you which December. And I'm like, dirty trick. Right? Because you don't always get, they don't always tell you, hey, by the way, like some really, 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 really bad, horrible stuff's going to happen to you, but just hang in there, you know, just stick with me to the end. Cause you wouldn't do it. If somebody had said you're going to have all these things happen to you, I might have never left California. They just said, go. I said, okay, I'll go. Well, now it's time to come back. And we've been through the ringer. There's been a lot of change in my family's life and they're pretty happy where they're at. We're living on the coast. It's time to leave. It's time to go. And I prayed. I said, show me a sign, even I won't question. I'm doubting myself now. I don't want to ruin their lives, you know. Show me a sign, even I won't question. We were in two cars. I would drive across the bridge. And we look up, and there's a bald eagle circling both of our cars. One, two, three, just like you described, bald eagle. We point up. And then everybody points their finger out the window and we're all pointing up. So we all know we all saw it. Right? We all saw it. Right? We're not, it's just not mom's not having one of her moments. We are all watching this. So I said, well, that's pretty good. But that wasn't all because that bald eagle dropped down just above our cars, right in between the two of them and flew in sync with us.
Wow.
For about a mile or so. And then it flew off.
That's what happened with a hawk, a red-shouldered hawk, on my way to the custody battle for my young son, where I won him back. And my mom was sitting in the passenger seat next to me. And I said, you see that hawk? That's the omen I was looking for. And she oh my God, I've never seen anything like that before, because it was driving with, it was flying alongside the car for so long, right at the level of our windows.
Yep.
Where we could
see. You could just put your hand out. And
it was amazing. And I knew in that moment, everything was going to be okay. Oh, another story I wanted to share. So while I was going through this process of all the court cases, people kept telling me, you need Ganesha in your life. You need Ganesha in your life. And I went, what is Ganesha? The third person told me, you need Ganesha in my life. And so then I was like, oh, I got to look into this more deeply, right? Well, I didn't have time to look into it, but my first experience where I got my children back together with me for the first time, all of us together, we were at a river and we were all looking down into the river and we saw this red shiny thing, and it was mostly in the mud. So you just saw this little piece of red sticking out, and I was like, let's get it. So we all got this stick and we were helping each other because it was real steep. So one of us had to hold the other one up while the other one went down to fish it out with the stick. And then the third person go and grab it while we're holding each other up the steep bank. It was Ganesha.
I was going to say, I can see. Was it like one of those little rosewood kind of statues or something? Like it sounds like red.
It's porcelain with the gold headdress. Oh, and it has red. And the mouse is there. And its hands were missing. And there were three broken hands. And I was like, that's us. Wow. He's fighting for us. And the last hand was
against the mouse of illusion.
With the thing was the last one that was the only one that was still together.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. I just got goosebumps.
And Ganesha is on my altar. And so what we would do is anytime we got back together, we would feed Ganesha. Anytime we were going to eat, we made a spirit plate for Ganesha, and I called on him every time I had court after that. And so he has become a revered spirit helper for my family through this way.
I love that. I could talk with you all day, but unfortunately, I think our time is done for today.
Okay, well, let's do it again.
Let's do it again. I really, you know, wanted to focus. I call this our community, because it's like you said, we need community. Even, you know, it's okay to be a recluse. It's okay to go in and do that work. But there's something about finding that connection on the other side and doing the next step together to wherever it goes. And you know, whatever comes after that comes, but we can refuel and replenish each other, not only with these really fun stories and synchronicities, but also just in knowing, you know, that there's a place for us in this world, and there's a place for our magic, there's a place for our medicine, and it's powerful. And things become exponentially powerful when they're shared and when they're, you know, connected through that web that we are all part of.
I think also something happens to our physical bodies on a cellular level when we come together that couldn't otherwise happen being alone. Because I know that whenever my body, my physical body, is near your physical body, I feel electrified. I feel renewed, and I leave feeling inspired and ready to take on the next thing. And I just hope we could spend more time together.
Yeah, I feel that too. And I look forward to just hanging out.
Yeah, growing medicine and plants.
Let's do some medicine.
Yeah.
And that big old, now that we've got the land cleared and if it stops snowing on us. Right. yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, some passion flowers.
I've got it. I've got them.
Yeah.
I've got all the seeds. They're just sitting there waiting. I'm struggling with my Hathor's Tulsi though. I'm just like, please, I might play your song to it, because I'm just like, please, they grew and then they die. You know, they're so small, that those little seedlings that are so fragile, but it's the Tulsi that I brought back from Hathor's temple in Egypt.
Oh yeah.
And last year I got like 100 seeds, and right now I've got 6 tiny little sprouts that I'm like, please.
Oh yeah.
Play the sistrum for me.
Yeah. We'll get him. We'll use some of that sacred healing water from hot springs, from the hot springs, hot tubs.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I've got the one, I've got, you know, it's virtually identical to the water of the Chalice Well in Glastonbury. And I've got Glastonbury water. So
yes,
I'll give a little sprinkle.
Yes.
It's got iron in it too. So, you know, because it has a high iron content, the Glastonbury water does.
Maybe it wants a little B vitamin.
Maybe.
It's good for helping sprouts.
Start. Okay. I'll put a little bit in the water.
And, the Jericho roses. I want to bring some for the store with their little dishes.
Oh, cool.
And they have all the instructions, the care instructions on them and stuff.
That's awesome. Hey, tell us where people can find your glass, aside from Artisan Gallery. I know we have a few pieces and we're going to be expanding into your lighting. But where, if somebody wants to check out your glass or purchase your glass, where do we send them?
So my business is called Moon Girl Glass. So you can go to moongirlglass.com. You can also find me on Facebook or Instagram, Moon Girl Glass. And I have a gallery space at my home. And it's right, my studio is right in front of my home. So if you wanted to take classes or come to the gallery, it's all happening at my house.
Now you have a lot of really cool classes. Like one of the things that's really amazing is that you open up your studio for people to come in and learn how to blow glass.
Yes. So one of the classes is just a beginner's glass blowing class where you pick out your colors and you get to make either an ornament, a drinking glass, or a paperweight. And then I have a hot glass date night class for couples, and that takes place at night. And we turn the studio into a ceremonial space. So there's a lot of beautiful photo ops with candles and the
nice.
The glory hole in the furnace lit up. And there's a lot of funny sexual terminologies in glass blowing. And so we bust them all out. And the hot glass date night class is called Blow Me. And so we turn it into a comedy skit to have fun so that you can play with your most cherished companion and build trust in that way.
That sounds so fun. I look forward to our next time together. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Mystic Tea is produced by the Ostara Network in conjunction with Of Wand and Earth and the Two Brooms Tea House. Of Wand and Earth is a mystical mercantile nestled in the magical mountains of North Carolina. We invite you to stop on in if you're ever in the Asheville area, or visit us online at www.ofwandandearth.com to learn more. Until then, blessed be.